I going to list a friend who loaned me some money for a couple weeks when times were tough? Of course I'm not going to do that.
Mr. Sternberg, what reasonable attorney would assume that his or her malpractice insurance would cover a loan upon which he or she defaulted? What reasonable attorney would assume that your malpractice insurance would cover your loans upon which you default?
If that loan were procured through, as the trial court in the underlying judgment here put it, the direct and proximate result of breaches of fiduciary duty, it's not so much a loan, it's malpractice. The procuring of the loan itself isn't the proximate cause here. The non-payment of the loan isn't the proximate cause here. The underlying judgment is a malpractice judgment. And, Your Honor, I think any reasonable attorney would assume that when he commits malpractice by serving his own interests, by defrauding the client, by withholding material information from the client, that the coverage language in the bar plan's policy would cover that, and that exclusion would be immaterial.
And the suit was not for the defaulting on the loan.
That's correct, Your Honor. It was not. It was an actual malpractice lawsuit.
The key seems to be, to me, to be the framing of the issue. The framing, do we have to look at whether the policy, generally, whether you look at an investment, a loan that could be an investment, or do we look more specifically at whether the circumstances of this case would be those that a reasonable attorney would believe were an investment? Is it a general all loans can't be investments, or is it this specific fact scenario?
I think under either mode of decision, Your Honor, we would still prevail.
Well, the reason, because there's specific testimony that there was discussion regarding that this is a great investment opportunity, and so there is some indication that this loan by a trust was undertaken because it was considered an investment, where generally, under the plain and ordinary meanings, loans might not be considered an investment. So is that distinction significant?
Well, in the testimony you mentioned, Your Honor, I'm not sure the word investment itself actually was used, but using the Lodoginski standard for what the underlying judgment itself found, the underlying judgment found, I suppose under your second mode of decision that you're talking about, that the damage here is the direct and proximate result of the breach of fiduciary duties, so we don't really have to look at whether an investment necessarily is a loan.
Your opponent argues they're they're so intertwined that you cannot separate out the malpractice and the making of the loan.
And that's not true. Mr. Taylor did not hire Mr. Workin to counsel him on loans, to give him investment advice, whatever, even any kind of financial advice. Mr. Workin was hired to handle some matters with someone who, opposing someone who was mismanaging his mother's trust. While engaging in that representation, as the underlying judgment finds, that's when Mr. Workin served his own interests, withheld material information from Mr. Taylor, and didn't make written disclosures regarding his ethical obligations. It was the pre-existing representation where those things happened. It wasn't some separate representation to do with the loan. So no, I don't agree at all that those are inextricably intertwined.
Is there not evidence that one of the things he hired Mr. Workin for was to tell him how to handle the money and that he had and what to invest it in or what to do with it?
That's not in the underlying judgment, no. Okay.
I think that if I was loaning money to someone and the person who was giving me the money for the loan was receiving a 30% return, that's a pretty good investment.
Well, in a colloquial way, I suppose, you might say that. But again, that's not the standard here. We're looking at an objective standard of whether it's reasonably possible, and I guess this goes back to Judge Breckenridge's first mode of decision, focusing on the term investment, is it reasonably possible that an attorney managing a small firm would not consider, regardless of what the interest rate is, a short-term loan to his business to be an investment? I certainly wouldn't consider that. I think
with that kind of rate of return, I mean, is that's more than a standard normal rate of return that we'd get with any bank or any financial institution.
The evidence in this case was, the at least what Mr. Workin told Mr. Taylor, was he's having some cash flow issues. He has a bunch of settlements that are going to come in. He hasn't gotten them yet. They're contingent fee cases. So can you lend me some money to cover that, and to make it worth your while, I'll give you 30% interest.
And it would be a, quote, tremendous investment opportunity.
I'm not sure he used the word investment. But regardless, that's not what the trial court found. And we are bound by what the lower court found in the underlying judgment. The underlying judgment doesn't include the word investment at all. But again, we have to look objectively at this, at that part of the question. And it goes back to what a reasonable person would think. And a reasonable person simply, if it's reasonably possible that a reasonable person could think that a loan like this would not be an investment, and I think that's entirely true. I'd like to address, because frankly we didn't get to in the Court of Appeals, our third point relied on, which goes to something broader. And that is this individual language that the bar plan points to, Section 3B4 of its policy, is part of a much broader set of language in Section 3B. Section 3B is not limited to this reasonable representative of investors language. It says that what it excludes is an insured's capacity, not capacities, as the following. And then it lists three things, including the fourth, but it joins them with the word and. It doesn't join them with the word
and.
And
your argument is, unless you meet all four categories, you're not excluded, but would anybody ever fill all four categories? I mean, it's pointless language, isn't it, if really it means, and I don't have it right before me, but they were very disparate kind of categories.
They are very disparate categories. An ERISA advisor, a government representative.
They really had it against that one guy who fits all those four categories.
Well, yeah. But at the same time, this court sort of went against that in the Burns case. In Burns, you had this exclusion that joined two totally disparate things as well.
As the author of Burns, I thought that was very reasonable.
I agree it was reasonable, Your Honor. It was a unanimous decision, too. It was a well-reasoned decision. But the point there was the insurer said, well, that's an absurd reading. And Your Honor, writing for the court, said, well, if they felt it was that absurd, they shouldn't have made them pay policy premiums on that basis. The question is, whether that word and joining these things becomes ambiguous. And Burns is on all fours with this. So frankly, this language doesn't matter to begin with. This court, the easiest way for the court to decide this case, frankly, is simply to say that the way in which that bulk exclusion was written was ambiguous and can be read, obviously, not to exclude coverage. It's something we didn't get to discuss in the Court of Appeals.
Some of the questions have gone to whether we look at the particular language or whether we stand back. And Judge Richardson asked, do we think the bar plan really intended to include this kind of self-dealing, basically, by the lawyer? And your argument, I take it, is that when you're dealing with an insurance contract, you look at the particular language, and you're bound by that, whether or not it was well-written or served their ultimate purpose is not.
That's exactly right. We quote Judge Learned Hand in saying that you can't hold insurers who seek to impose upon words of common speech an esoteric significance intelligible only to their craft must bear the burden of any resulting confusion. They're held to it. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. We'll have some time on rebuttal. Mr. Baldwin.
May it please the Court. The Bar Plan Mutual Insurance Company is a legal malpractice insurance company. It is not a bond company. It is not a guarantor of loans. And I submit to you, and the Court's already raised this question, we said it in our brief, before a lawyer ever opened his malpractice policy, if you stopped him on the street and said, do you think that if you got a client to loan you a bunch of money and you didn't pay it back, that your malpractice policy would cover you for that? And they would all say, no.
But that's not the issue, is it? It's the issue is the language. Is it would you stop him on the street and say, if you got your client to loan you a bunch of money, would you think that was called an investment?
Well, that's what we're going to get to. In fact, so we start with the presumption that you wouldn't expect your malpractice policy to cover this in the first place. Then we open the policy and we look at what it says, all right?
Well, but again, the framing of the issue is, and of course you would not expect your malpractice coverage to pay a defaulted loan, but that's very different. You would expect your malpractice coverage to pay for malpractice that you may have engaged in getting your client to do something, even making a loan?
It would, except when it concerns your own economic self-interest by reason of this exclusion. I totally agree with you, Judge, that the key is the context in which you frame the question. So that lawyer opens the policy, and he looks at it, and he says, I'm about to make a loan, or get my client to make a big loan to me, all right, with a big interest rate. I'm about to do that. Under those circumstances, would this policy cover it? And he looks and says, well, the exclusion says it's not going to cover anything where a legal representative, the lawyer, is a legal representative of investors in regard to and resulting in investment in an enterprise in which the insured owns an equity interest or for which he receives a fee. Put another way, whenever the lawyer is in a self-conflicted economic situation where he's either going to be paid to find money for a would-be borrower or where he's himself owning the entity, which could be his law firm, could be another company.
But the assumption in that statement is that a loan is an investment.
Well, here we go. So he says, all right, I'm going to read this policy and say, can I get this client to pay this money and still be covered? All right.
But I understand you want to frame it that way, but our question is, does the term of the exclusions are written by you and they're strictly construed and it says investment. I mean, it would have been so simple to put in the word loan. You didn't put in the word loan or any kind of financial transaction. There's lots of other words you could have used. I don't think, as I understand opposing counsel's argument, it's not that loans can't be considered a type of investment, but that using the word investment is ambiguous what you mean. You say, they make the point that the loans were to his law practice, some of them, and you can't invest in a law practice if you're a non-lawyer. Your answer is, well, obviously that just means an equity investment. But why is it obvious there and not obvious in your insurance policy?
Okay, you asked a couple of things, and I'll try to do them in reverse order, and if I forget the first
thing,
remind
me.
The equity issue is a complete misdirect with regard to the statute that says you can't purchase equity interest in a law practice. Because suppose that the lawyer did that. Suppose he sold this client instead, in this case, what the client thought were equity shares in this. All right? Do you think that this exclusion would still not apply? Of course it would apply.
But
right?
No, my question is somewhat different. Can a law firm get a loan from a bank?
Absolutely, a law firm can get a loan.
Can a law firm get a bank to invest in it?
Yes, unless it represents the bank, and then it has a conflict situation. It needs to be careful about it. And it should not represent the bank for its side of the transaction.
A bank can't invest in a law firm. If we're talking about equity investment. So you're saying loans but not equity.
Correct.
There's more than one kind of investment.
Or he could tell a bank, maybe the bank doesn't know that, and he tells the bank they can invest. If the fact that the bank thinks they're buying stock when they can't doesn't make this
That's not my point. My point is you're saying investment means different things in these different circumstances.
I'm saying it means all of those things, and it's a deliberate term. It means loans and it means equity.
But not when you're dealing with law firms, because loans are okay, but equity's not for law firms. You're giving a different meanings in those two different contexts.
Right, and either
one. Isn't that the point that opposing counsel is making, is if it has multiple meanings, it's ambiguous?
No, I'm saying it has multiple meanings, and so all of those meanings are included. It was deliberately placed there in a broad way on purpose. Would any lawyer think, oh, I can't make this if it's an equity transaction irrespective of the statute? Maybe it's the Longview loans. I can't make this irrespective of it. But if I just make it a loan, then this exclusion won't apply. I don't think any lawyer would reasonably think that exclusion was an out if you just made it a loan. That exclusion is clearly about conflicted self-interest, where you're getting somebody to commit money to an entity that you own or that you're being paid to find.
I guess the question is it clear when you didn't say it that way? You said just the word investment.
I think it's clear because investment encompasses all of that. In fact, his cases over and over continue to indicate that investment encompasses that broad term. It's okay to use a broad term, and the court knows this, obviously, in an exclusion when you want the exclusion to be broad. The point of the exclusion is the self-conflicted economic interest of the lawyer. And wherever you have that, you don't want the lawyer taking that client's money, calling it whatever you want to call it. Call it an intractable, irreversible future. You don't want the lawyer taking that client's money and using it for a business in which he owns, all right? That's not what anybody wants to cover. That's obvious what from reading that exclusion. It is inconceivable to me that anybody would say, well, it excludes people making an investment, but that still means they could commit the same money in the same conflicted situation and just call it a loan. That's what's inconceivable to me. If you stop and you look at that exclusion in the context of I'm about to get money from this client for my business.
So if we answer the question, it would be really stupid to do that, then it can't mean that? I mean,
I'm saying it's an unreasonable interpretation of it.
If we disagree with you that the plain and ordinary meaning of the word investment includes loans, do you lose?
Not necessarily, but I need to...
And I'm going back to the question that I asked earlier. Is it a question of whether investment, the plain and ordinary meaning of investment, includes loans to attorneys, and whether they're practicing in a small firm or all attorneys, hasn't been addressed. But, or is it whether the facts of this specific case, that the nature of this transaction would be interpreted as being an investment?
It's always going to be the nature of the transaction. I mean, that's true in every situation. We could talk about what if it was some other kind of loan or some other type of investment. It's always about whether the particular transaction that's involved here would qualify.
The objective test of what attorneys would believe the circumstances of this particular transaction were an investment.
Right.
So can you
right before they made that transaction, if they opened their policy and looked at it, would they think it would disqualify it?
So can you give an example of when a loan would not be an investment?
I don't think there are any. I disagree that
a bank loan is an investment?
What?
A bank loan is an investment?
I think in the broadest sense of the term, which was used deliberately broadly, that's correct.
Well,
and how do we know it's used in that broadest sense in the policy?
Because because it's about a conflict, all right, and it's about a financial interest conflict, and that financial interest conflict is to tell the lawyer, we're not going to cover you if you're in a financial interest conflict.
And where does it say that in that exclusion, that this is about financial interest conflicts and we're going to exclude all those?
It says it directly, Your Honor. It says it where the lawyer either owns an equity interest, that's an automatic one, or whether he's getting a fee from the other borrower. So those are, it lists the two financial conflicts, self-conflicts, in the exclusion.
And so could the lawyer go to a bank and get a loan because they were short on money and they needed it to survive, and it was, even if the bank was their client, could they get a loan from the bank?
He could do it if the bank was not his client and be covered. There's nothing to be covered for. If the bank was his client, then this is the situation where he should not represent the bank for that transaction. Right?
But if is he covered?
No, because he's done exactly what he's not supposed to do.
Does it depend on what interest rate the bank gets? Is that relevant if you get 2% or 20 or 30?
I don't think so, because I think it's what it's really about is getting a client to commit money to a business that you own. Period.
It's a good or bad investment or a loan as opposed to...
Yeah, you can have a good investment or bad investment, but it's getting the commitment of the money.
What if law firms are buying or building buildings all the time?
Mm-hmm.
What if the law firm gets a loan from a bank in building a 24-story building or something, or buying a 24-story building in the Hallmark Plaza or something?
It's perfectly fine as long as they don't represent the bank in that transaction.
And you think this is clear from use of that word investment and so forth?
Absolutely. The Supreme Court's talked about loans for interest being investment. The United States Supreme Court, this court has. The cases he cites have talked about. In fact, the cases he cites are because it includes loans and equity, and there are cases that have to sort out which one it is because of the particular rule they're following. But clearly it includes it. It's elegant in its simplicity because it covers any commitment of money that you get that client to make to that entity, whether that's yours that you own an interest in or to the entity that's paying you to get the loan.
Mr. Baldwin, aren't we just engaging in mental gymnastics here? And seriously, if you would ask I realize that the standard here is a reasonable attorney standard, but whether you ask a reasonable attorney or you ask Joe Blow on the street what is an investment, isn't that simply an expenditure of your money in hopes of some type of income or profit? Whether that be me loaning you money or me putting my money in a savings account at the bank or purchasing a CD, a certificate of deposit, I don't buy an equity interest in the bank, but I hope to get some return on my money. Isn't that an investment?
My personal opinion of that, Judge, is not only as I, an individual on the street, is that my definition, it is the definition objectively for what individuals do. That means on by reading dictionaries, it's the both lay dictionaries, both the big lay dictionaries say that's what that is. He goes to the eighth definition of another dictionary to find anything that might be different than that. The United States Supreme Court agrees with what you just said. Black's Law Dictionary agrees with what you just said. So I concur completely that the man on the street or the lawyer would have the same outlook and definition of investment. And by the objective measures of that, which are dictionaries most of all, it's the same. Investment includes a loan, for instance.
But often we interpret what the appropriate reasonable person would think. Oftentimes, there are multiple alternative meanings for a particular word. And we don't interpret the word, as you're arguing, to be broadly to include all of those meanings. We look at what the term means under the context in which it is added. And so I know you argue that it should be broadly interpreted, but again, isn't it what the reasonable attorney would interpret and would think the meaning is, the plain and ordinary meaning?
I agree with you, but you do it in the context of that exclusion, all right? I completely agree with you, but you do it in the context of that exclusion. And that exclusion says we're not going to cover you if it arises out of being a representative of investors in regard to resulting in investment in an enterprise in which the lawyer owns an equity interest or receives a fee. So you read that and you say, what is that trying to do? What is that there for? What are they doing? Well, what they're doing is saying, when I'm, as a lawyer, I'm in this self-conflicted economic situation of either getting an investor client to put money in my business that I own, or getting an investor client for somebody else that's going to pay me. When I'm in that conflicted situation, I can't do it. Investment, by any definition, I can't do it. And would it make any sense for a lawyer to look at that and say, oh, well, it says investor, and so let's just call that an equity investment, and then I can do it by a loan. The same conflict, the identical conflict is there that's being described. Interest in which you own a business in which you own an interest, or that you're getting paid to find the loan for it. The same conflict is there whether you call it a loan or whether you call it equity. Getting the client's money, same conflict. No reasonable lawyer would say, oh, well, yeah, but if I can call it a loan, I can get out from this investment thing. I think that's a stretched, creative, I give them credit, interpretation, but it's not realistic, reasonable interpretation. That's the key. Is it a reasonable interpretation under those circumstances? And if you look at this exclusion right before you make that transaction, I think you reasonably would always conclude you can't sneak under it by using a loan. It's intended for the broad purpose.
And the Court of Appeals found that it was ambiguous. And under the rules of construction, we rule against your client. Can you address that?
Well, yes, two things. I would point out that Judge Mitka, who's also sat on this court on some very important opinions, found in favor of my client. In fact, nobody even raised that argument until we got to the Court of Appeals, by the way. So my point is, they looked at it when you look at it. They look at this in a vacuum. They look at it as stopping somebody on the street and say, define investment for me. All right? It's not how you look at it. You look at this circumstance, and right before the circumstance, you look at that policy and that provision, and you say, would that policy provision keep me from being covered in this? So they looked at it in the wrong frame of reference, I think, is the main point. And they may have certain orientations that I'll refrain from, but that's separate.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
I agree we have to look at the circumstances of this case, and Judge Richardson's example, you want to ask an ordinary person on the street, if a lawyer commits malpractice by conning loans out of a client, Are those conned loans, are those fraudulent loans that he was disbarred for this, are those fraudulent loans investments in the lawyer's enterprise? Absolutely not. The cases we cite don't all say that a loan is an investment. Far from it. We cite a variety of cases. The Kiker case from this court in 1943, the Terry case from the Alabama Bankruptcy Court, the Reeves case from the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Oren case from the Eighth Circuit, all of which hold that loans are not necessarily investments. In the federal tax context, there's a huge, you know, Byzantine test that the federal courts use to determine this exact question, but that really is immaterial here one way or another. The Bar Plan's argument that you just heard is it's okay to use a broad term because a broad term necessarily encompasses all the definitions they want them to encompass. Yes, they're right. There are definitions of investment that would include a loan, including, you know, this you know, committing money for a financial interest. But there's another definition that ordinary people use, which is to purchase something with the expectation of benefit. And as the Bar Plan points out in their brief, the only other case out there to interpret this exact exclusion, or at least deal with that exclusion, they didn't really have to interpret it because no one alleged it was ambiguous, is the Vaughn case from the Sixth Circuit a few years ago. And that's an excellent example of what this really was designed to cover. There's no allegation of malpractice in Vaughn. It was simply that a lawyer who wasn't having some kind of conflict of interest or anything like that had an equity interest in some kind of commodities firm and got her clients to invest in that commodities firm, which went belly up. And they sued on, unlike here, a breach of contract or something like that. And the Sixth Circuit said this exclusion applies because that's a purchase for the expectation of benefit. It's the purchase of an equity interest in the company. Essentially, the Bar Plan tries to turn this court's longstanding historic reading of insurance exclusions on its head. If you have multiple meanings, as Your Honors, as several of you pointed out, if you have multiple meanings, some of which favor coverage and some of which which favor an exclusion, there's coverage. And that's how the court should decide this case.
Your opponent argues that you have to get to the eighth alternative definition of investment to find one that does not apply to a loan. Can you address that issue, that in fact, if all of the alternatives would cover loans except for number eight, then loan might reasonably be included?
Okay. Two answers, if I may be permitted. I see I'm out of time.
You can answer this question, yes.
Certainly. First, I don't think it's the eighth definition. We use the 2011 edition of the American Heritage Dictionary, and I think it's the third definition. But the question, again, isn't whether there are definitions of investment which would necessarily include loans. I'll fully admit that there are. I admitted it before. The question is whether there are some that reasonably would not include it, and that's the answer here. Thank you, Your Honors. We ask the court to reverse.
The matter will be taken under submission.